This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. As we welcome you in, I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown Las Vegas at the D Bar Canada, right there off of Fremont Street. Hope you had a nice weekend. Kind of a weird time of the year because, right, we just had Thanksgiving. You go into a nice weekend, more football kicked out on the other side, and here we are. Got plenty to do, including breaking news from the NFL. I'll get to that in just a second. Of course, Week 12 concludes tonight in Minnesota, Chicago, Minnesota, a little in-division rivalry here. The number open Minnesota 3.5. Now, this number did get bet down to 2.5. And then even as late as last night, like 2-3 in the morning, DraftKings was showing Minnesota laying 2.5. And then essentially all day today, back up the 3. So that key number 3, remember, always think about that key number of 3. Late last night, if you were on your screen and you liked the Vikings, you could have got the 2.5. Frankly, you could have, again, the Bears, and we'll have Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper, talking about this as far as timing. You could have got 3.5 with the Bears. Just the dance that goes on when betting. Also today, 5 NBA games, including the Lottery Bowl, boys. You got the 2-14 Pistons and the 2-14 Washington Wizards. The Pistons, by the way, have lost 13 straight games. Freaking disaster. Lakers 76ers, a good one. 6 on the ice for Mr. Shaw. 15 college basketball. And while the big guy, let's be fair, the big guy's a donk, as we say hi to the fellas. He complained about bad Maction. He complained about Conference USA football. And you take a look at the board and you got nothing. So I hope you're happy with what you brought upon us, Dustin Sweetelson. But we don't start with you. We say hi to Amal Shaw. What's cracking?
Not much, man. I'll tell you what, I am a little bit annoyed with you, Maher, because I thought we were going to retire the term donk, and I must have used the term donk 20 times this past week watching college basketball when guys would not make front end or free throws to get me 2 more points on a total. I can't stop saying it. I mean, I'm going to need to go to rehab for it.
It's an addiction, and you're welcome. I'll start there with that. And it's also, I realize now it's a term of endearment and also a way to crush somebody, because I call my dog donk, I call my mom donk, and then oftentimes I use it as a loving term. So again, but apologize and say you're welcome at the same time. Here's what's weird. Dustin revealed 2 weeks ago that he's a big Herm Edwards guy, which, okay, the dude's like 70 games under 500. But anyway, he's a Herm Edwards guy. And then today we get on the phone. He goes, you know, I'm a big Frank Reich guy. Now, before I introduce the donk, Dustin, can I ask you, Amal Shaw, do you have an affinity outside of Frank Reich coming back in the day? Remember, Jim Kelly gets hurt. The Houston Oilers, who I freaking loved, they're up like 35 against the Bills. And Frank Reich led the craziest comeback in the postseason of all time. Outside of that, I've got no feelings for Frank Reich.
It's funny you said that, Patrick. Before you even mentioned that game in the wild card between the Bills and the Oilers at Orchard Park when they came back, I didn't think about him either. Let's be real here. Frank Reich only comes up in your thought process when you hear the name David Tepper or you think there's going to be a potential coach on the hot seat. And really, guys, doesn't come as much of a surprise that Tepper decides to make a move from it. For people that are unfamiliar with David Tepper, he's a former hedge fund guy, multi-billionaire, one of the richest 200-300 people in the world. He bought a beach house of a former guy at Goldman Sachs that fired him, bought the house for $43 million from that guy's ex-wife, knocked it down and built a house twice the size just to kind of show off to the guy. So what does that tell you about Tepper and how hard of a job it's going to be for the next head coach?
So that brings us good lead in to the Carolina Panthers today announced and David Tepper, their owner, that they fired Frank Reich. It's not even a year in. Obviously, he's just 11 games in, NFL worst 1-10 record. This is 24 hours after the owner, Tepper, left the locker room muttering an expletive following Sunday's 17-10 loss to the Tennessee Titans in Nashville. He becomes, to Amal's point, the first NFL head coach since the 70 merger to be fired in back-to-back seasons as he was dismissed last year by the Indianapolis Colts. So it's not a great run, but it does set up perfectly my, I guess, consternation as to why Dustin Sweetelson is a Frank Reich guy. Why?
Is your name Patrick Maher or Patrick Misconstruer? Like, you take my words and you twist them in these evil ways. I was a big Herm Edwards as a human being guy. And with Frank Reich, I just have a soft spot for him because when you look at Frank Reich in his role, right, everyone knows him as a player, but he grinded his way up through the coaching ranks. Finally, with the Eagles, has this moment where he tutors Nick Foles in the middle of the season to come in for Carson Wentz, who is having an MVP season under his tutelage, and wins a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback. And Frank Reich got a lot of credit for that while working under Doug Peterson. So then it's like Frank Reich's been working and grinding all these years to finally get an opportunity to be a head coach in the National Football League. And who's the first owner he works for? Jim Irsay. Probably the most unhinged owner we have in the NFL right now. Like, mental stability, there are major question marks there. Then he gets fired from there after Irsay is meddling in the football business, bringing in veteran quarterback who's toast after veteran quarterback who's toast. White toast, by the way, for both of them. And then he goes to Carolina, where it's like, okay, I have a fresh start. I finally get to show what I can do. I won't have an owner being involved in football decisions. I will be able to showcase what I did with Carson Wentz, what I did with Nick Foles, how I got a freaking ring for the city of Philadelphia. And he's told he can't draft the quarterback he wants. He's told he has to make it work with Bryce Young, who can't look over the offensive line. So when I look back at what Frank Reich's had to go through over the last couple of years, I think it's a little unfair, and I feel for the guy because his dream is crushed. It is over, and he will not get a third time being a head coach in the NFL.
Okay, so thanks for that soliloquy. Now that you're done with your, apparently somebody's getting married and you just gave a speech, you said, Amal, did I misconstrue his words? Because he just gave a commencement speech on how much he loves Frank Reich. Like, how did I misconstrue anything? That you just stood up on the table and said, I love Frank Reich, and let me tell you why, better than Frank Reich could have done.
I don't even know if I like Frank Reich as a coach. I just think he hasn't gotten a fair shake twice now.
Well, I would agree with you. The firing, I thought, was a little bit abrupt in Indianapolis. But come on, man. I don't think Frank Reich's family is like, he's our dad. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Frank, you know what Frank Reich is? He's a God-fearing dude. He's going to be fine. He rides shotgun with Jesus Christ sitting right there. He's not the type of guys that's negative. As a matter of fact, he already did an interview with the Charlotte Observer and is like, this is the greatest experience of my life. Yeah, you know what the greatest experience of my life would be? Len and John Goulet sitting me down and saying, we're going to fire you and give you $10 million on the way out the door. So he's going to be just fine is what I'm trying to say about Frank Reich.
Okay, I get what you're saying. Let's play this clip. I want you to look into this human being's eyes. When I look into his eyes and I hear his voice, I see and hear a broken man whose dreams have been crushed, not by his own actions. This is Frank Reich after the game answering questions about the team being off to a 1-10 start.
You know, what are you going to do? You're 1-10. What are you going to start? Feel sorry for yourself? You think something's going to magically fix everything? No. You know, we lost a close football game today. These games are winnable. That message doesn't fly when you're 1-10, but I know these games are winnable. I know we have the players and the coaches to do that. So we regroup and we get ready for this week.
You asked us to look into his eyes. He had a hat pulled down over his eyes. That's one. And secondly, Amal, correct me if I'm wrong, but Frank Reich's the dude that wanted Carson Wentz. That's the reason he was fired in Indy. He was like, I'll take Carson Wentz. Irsay's like, sure, go ahead. It failed miserably. Then Irsay was like, I'm going to move on. I don't think that was completely, you know, on the owner there.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. He had 1-7-9 season in the first 4 years. The other three were winning records. And then he goes 3-5-1 last year in Indianapolis. They move on from him. But guys, he talks about this being a one possession game. This is only the third game that they lost that was a one possession game. They were losing every other game by double digits. They've been non-competitive for a while. Look, they were fortunate Will Levis in Tennessee was on the other side there. That's the only reason it was a 7-point game. I don't know if this is the best move in the short term, but if you're Bryce Young and company, you'll get an opportunity for a fresh start. But I'm going to tell you right now, I know it's early. I don't know if you guys sign off on this, but I feel like David Tepper has given me Jerry Jones vibes in about 20 years, but without having had Jimmy Johnson in the stable and three Super Bowl rings. He's going to be in charge. I think eventually in about 5 years, he's going to be the general manager. This is a guy that wants to be in charge of everything. He's kind of a guy that's going to be very aggressive in terms of how things play out based on it being his organization.
Yeah, he is. He's a guy that, and again, I don't know. I know the jokes this morning have been, if you're just joining us, Frank Reich was fired after 11 games, the Carolina Panthers head coach. They don't really have an offensive line. They don't have a ton of skill. Dustin said it. Do you guys have corroboration that Reich definitely wanted Stroud? Because it feels like one of those things that people have now said on X.
Yeah.
And it's just becoming facts. Like, do we know for a fact that he was like, no, I want Stroud?
No, we don't have 100. It's one of those hearsay things. It's like just made the rounds where everyone is just repeating like that he wanted Stroud when they traded up. But remember, there was that video of him and Josh McCown like being buddy buddy with Bryce Young when he did his pro day. So we don't have anything to solidify that report. And also, like, it could just be the other way around. It could have been he wanted Bryce Young and Tepper wanted CJ Stroud. We don't know. We just don't know.
Right. Yeah, you're right, Patrick. We don't know for sure. The only thing I will say in Frank Reich's defense on that one, he's a bigger guy. And I can see a quarterback like him having been through the rigors, knowing what it takes to play the position in the National Football League. He looks at a guy like Bryce Young and says, this guy's two hits away from his career ending.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Reich's a big dude. And listen, he probably is tapped out as far as ever coaching in the NFL, as far as a head coach. But I will say this, if he is up for an interview, he should have Dustin interview for him. My gosh. You like Frank Reich better in your family? Like, have you ever had the conversation with your family that you'd like to replace them?
I don't even know what I don't even know what system.
Herm Edwards or Frank Reich? Go ahead, pick one.
Frank Reich.
Yeah.
Got a ring.
All right.
By the way, I just want to tick off Goulet real quick. Quick update from Craven Cottage. I know you care about this. Fulham 1-0 on the score sheet already, 7 minutes in.
Wow, the Wolves were like, that is interesting. I know a lot of quote sharp money on the Wolves today because Fulham's been struggling, as Dustin knows. We should ask Herm about the EPL.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We got you back here. Big weekend. Happy holidays as it continues and rolls along. We've got week 12 rolling along, pardon me, tonight. Of course, Minnesota hosting Chicago. And right now, Minnesota laying over at DraftKings 3. A total of 44. So we'll get to that game in our plays. We've got Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper, joining us in the final hour. He'll have plenty on that. I know that you, Dustin, have a couple of props. I do as well in the NBA. And for some reason, we were talking about the coaches because Frank Reich, if you're just joining us here, was let go today. Look, we do know that Tepper's going to be the main story here, as Amal mentioned, you know, kind of that Billions connection, contentious as far as impetuous, I should say, where he acts maybe rashly and people believe that he's a bit of a jerk. But would you guys agree that if you do know, like, I botched this and Reich isn't going to be the guy moving forward, I think you just rip the Band-Aid off. I don't have a problem if he knows Frank Reich isn't the guy moving on at this time, because Frank Reich's going to have a nice little parachute on the way out and bring somebody in to work with that quarterback, because that quarterback is the next 10 years. If it goes well, so does the franchise. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
I would agree with you. I think your overall assessment is correct and accurate in terms of if you don't think you have the right head coach, you should move on. However, I'm not sure whether Frank Reich is good or bad in this situation in Carolina. You look at in Indianapolis, 3 out of 5 years, he had a winning record. In Carolina right now, they've already relinquished their first overall pick, which is going to go to the Chicago Bears for the trade to get Bryce Young last year. The offensive line has been putrid. You don't have a number one receiver on this team. Adam Thielen is 33 years old. So with all that being said, is this completely on the doorstep of Frank Reich, or is this a combination of lack of talent, bad coaching, and then a quarterback who's young and inexperienced at this point in time?
Yeah, no, and it's point well taken about not necessarily, again, he doesn't have an offensive line. He doesn't have a skill position. It's not a very good roster, and the job itself, I don't know how desirable it is. They just gave away the top half of their draft. They don't have a second rounder next year, the Carolina Panthers. So, I don't know, in a shaky rookie quarterback, I don't know if people are running to, like, look, you get an opportunity to get one of 32 in the NFL, you're going to take the job. But I think here's what I will say. if there was an action that was a little too swift, maybe it was the Matt Rhule firing, even though we all agree that Matt Rhule feels more like a college coach, but they moved on from him pretty quickly.
I just think with this job, it's just unique because you have an undersized quarterback and you need someone who understands how to scheme around that. And you definitely can't go with a defensive coach here. You need something offensive. So there's some stability on that side of the ball to develop it in the early years of Bryce Young. Also, second note, you said the word react rashly. I didn't know that was a word because when I heard rashly, all I could think was that should be the nickname for SMU head coach Rhett Lashley.
Speaking of which, I don't know why the Gamecocks, South Carolina, aren't firing Beamer today and hiring Rhett Lashley, who's 40 years old and is killing it at SMU 2 seconds later.
Can I tell you, that guy was
crazy for that?
He was awesome at Miami. The offense was the best it had been in years. Losing him has set them back years.
I would agree with you, Patrick. I mean, you look at the job he's done. It wasn't just this weekend against Navy. We saw it earlier this year in a game against Middle Tennessee. They put up, I think, 52 in the first half in that game. I mean, this offense has been electric. Preston Stone is solid, but you give him an elite quarterback, this offense is going to be electrifying wherever he is. And I think in the SEC, and to your point, building on, you talked about at Carolina, Dustin, and Patrick, I think you're right. In today's, particularly in college football and even in the NFL, I would be looking to hire offensive-minded guys. The game, the way it's officiated, the way it's called, it's about a quarterback and a coach. If you can get that combination correct, you've got an opportunity to be competitive. Take, for example, I'm not saying the Houston Texans are great, but they were, I don't know, could you have a more accurate field goal kick that just comes up about 8 inches short, 10 inches short than the one we saw yesterday from Amendola against the Jacksonville Jaguars? You get a new coach. You get a great, I know D'Amico Ryan's on the defensive side of the ball, but you get a franchise quarterback in Young. You get, in Stroud. And then you look at Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes sits his first year, plays the last game of the regular season, comes in a year or two, and then becomes an elite superstar. And you see the difference it makes in a franchise. And I think that's the same thing. You bring up the point with Lashley going to South Carolina and potentially Carolina if they go get an offensive-minded coach.
Well, another reason why I think you need an offensive-minded head coach, because that way, that side of the ball never changes. And it doesn't, like, that is such a crucial part to a quarterback and an offense and having a system, is that stability. But also, like, you look around the league, there's always a Vic Fangio, a Steve Spagnuolo, a Dan Quinn, a Wink Martindale. Like, there's all these grizzled defensive guys that, like, that's all they're ever going to be, is a defensive coordinator trying to learn how to stop the new age offense, however it evolves. So you can always find those guys. The last thing you want is to have to hire offensive coordinators only to lose them to head coaching jobs, then have your quarterback and offense have to start completely over every year.
You mentioned Middle Tennessee State just randomly. They just fired Rick Stockskill, who was the fourth most tenured head coach in all of college football. So he gone after, I believe, like 18 seasons at Middle Tennessee State.
Stupid schedule this year. Had Alabama and Missouri on the way back up. Just an awful, dumb schedule.
Well, that's not whether he's getting fired. He's getting fired for losing games to Sam Houston State.
No, I know, but it was just an idiotic move to have those both on the schedule, two SEC teams.
Okay, boys, week 12 takeaways. We like to package it a little differently with like, love, loathe. Here we go.
Weekend of action with what we liked.
All right.
What we loved.
I had an awesome time.
Like, I know that you had an awesome time. Okay? I think the entire town knows that you had an awesome time.
And what we loathe.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is Like, Love, and Loathe. Sharp Money.
By the way, if the Minnesota Vikings win and cover tonight, that will make the favorites 13-3 straight up in ATS for week 12, which is an insane number. I don't know. That's probably 13-3 would be, I think 12-3 is the first time it's happened 12 times where the favorite won straight up and covered ATS since 2017. Have we had a 13-3 week? Dustin, you were talking about that with me earlier today. No,
according to ESPN Stats and Info, a 13-3 week of favorites has never happened.
Okay. So I bring that up because my like is going to be coaching the Minnesota Vikings tonight, lane 3, hosting Chicago. And they're in the mix. I looked it up at DraftKings just before the show started. You know, the Vikings are plus 475 in division, boys. They're 6-5. The Lions, of course, after they regurgitated on themselves with turkey and stuffing and yams and the rest of it on Thanksgiving. What a freaking disaster. The Lions are 8-3. Okay, so the assumption is, let's say Minnesota wins tonight. They're 7-5 going into the bye. Now, Justin Jefferson is not going to play tonight, but he's going to be ready to go coming out of the bye. So they're starting to get healthy as well. Kevin O'Connell, though, I'm going to say this. I think the McVay coaching tree is going to start to get very interesting. In 2 years at Minnesota, and I don't think, you guys correct me if after my little rant here, I don't think over the last 2 years it feels like O'Connell's had the most overwhelming talent in the NFL. Though last year he went 13-4, and this year he went 6-5, 19-9 over the last two seasons. Okay, Minnesota, which is interesting. Minnesota has Chicago, they got a bye, then they got Vegas, Cincinnati, Detroit, Green Bay, and then close out with Detroit. They could sweeten Detroit if they split it. So if they split with Detroit, you guys would agree Chicago could be a win. Vegas could definitely be a win. Cincy could definitely be a win. Let's say they split with Detroit, one home, one away. Green Bay could be a win. That would be 1, 2, 3, 4. I got them 10 and what am I missing here? 10. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. 10-7 to finish the season. Probably doesn't get it done because Detroit's got New Orleans, Chicago, Denver, Minnesota, at Dallas, and then Minnesota. So it looks like Detroit's going to win the division, but the two games against each other certainly makes it interesting. My like is O'Connell because he's done a hell of a job there, and he's dealt with losing his quarterback, obviously, and gone 2-1 since with a guy they just picked up.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of positive points there. Let's start with Kevin O'Connell. I think he's a tremendous coach. This is the guy who was a former quarterback at San Diego State. I think when you look at it, he's the ability to deal with anything in any situation. His father's an FBI agent. You don't think this guy's been in more difficult situations than any head coach in the National Football League? He's heard some of the stories along the way. His disposition is outstanding. I love the way he handles himself, the way his team kind of responds to him. This team is in a great position. They were left for dead. Now they're sitting there at 6-5. You mentioned the Bears tonight at home. And then at the Raiders, very winnable game. At the Bengals, are you kidding me, Jake Browning? Talk about stealing money for a living. And then here's the key for me, Patrick. They get the Lions at home before they have to play the return trip on the last game of the regular season. If they can somehow win these games that I just mentioned coming up, and then the Packers are at home as well, they could potentially be playing for the division in the final week of the regular season. I know it sounds like a long stretch for them to kind of project out that they're going to be able to win their remaining five games and get to the final game of the regular season and win that one in Detroit. But I think if you want a long shot, I think the Minnesota Vikings right now, I think you said 475. They're a good bet to win the division. And here's the thing. If they win that game against Detroit, you're going to have an incredible opportunity to be able to hedge the rest of the way on the division and just take Detroit, because we know it's a two-team race in the NFC North.
I think, Dustin, like I said earlier, some coaches find ways to win ball games. And last year, everyone called for the regression, and this team was not going to be able to replicate what they did. And to a degree, they haven't, but I think the roster is a lot different, especially on the defensive side of the football. I think Kevin O'Connell is a very stoic leader. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He has like a very middle-of-the-road personality, and I think that shows in his team. His team never panics, and what he's doing with Josh Dobbs on the fly is one of the most impressive coaching jobs we've ever seen. This team is absolutely alive in the division, and it's a three-coach race for Coach of the Year. It's O'Connell, D'Amico Ryans, and Mike Tomlin. That's it.
I didn't know his dad was a FBI in the FBI. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Was he really? Because if his dad really was in the FBI, we wouldn't know about it.
Well, wait a second. Charles Peanut Tillman's in the FBI, and we know about it.
Have we heard from him?
Does every family in America have that uncle that's definitely in the CIA, but then you talk amongst yourself? Well, how do you know? Me too. Uncle Jimmy, RIP.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network right now. And this will be fascinating because Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper, pregame.com, Fezzik Sports with two Z's and a K on Twitter. He sent us a couple of bets. One, a tremendous number for tonight with the Chicago Bears. I won't give it away. I'll tease it a little bit. And then two, a tremendous approach to 49ers, Philadelphia, coming up next Sunday. We'll get to those in just a bit. Just want to welcome you back, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, because we've got a bunch of great notes. But I think we should start here little chance to flex, Mr. Fezzik. This is incredible. Let's talk about what Circa Millions is and give you your props. You're 41-15-3. You're sitting in second place in Circa Millions, 3-1 this week. And you also have Chicago catching 3.5 tonight, but 41-15-3. Take a bow.
Well, you know, it's just ridiculous. I'm running better than God pretty much when you have to, because you have to dodge raindrops throughout to, it's like winning the main event with 5,000 other people. To give an example of how ridiculous and ludicrous this is, imagine you start 10-0, all right? That's a pretty good start. It's like, okay, from that point forward, you know, just pick a few more winners than losers. You should be in good shape. No, pick 67% after starting 10-0, and that gets you second place. Not first, second. It's, I hate to say this, but realistically, this is my last shot at something this big, because it comes around once in a lifetime, and here it is. So let's hope knock on the table that things continue.
Well, I'll just follow up quickly, Amal, and just say the reason he brings it up is because, of course, Fezzik has won the Super Contest twice, and he always talks about how there were less, obviously, entries back then. But this is Circa Millions. Do you guys know how many are involved in the contest this year?
5,300.
That's my exact guess.
5,300. 300, and you're sitting in second place. Amal, it's an incredible run right now.
It truly is, because if you really look at it, take, for example, this past week, you mentioned the favorites going, 12-3 so far, Patrick. So now here's an opportunity where they might wind up at 13-3 or 12-4. So a lot of people are probably going to play the favorites. You got to play a lot of the dogs in these situations, like Steve's on Chicago tonight. But I don't care how you slice it. 41, forget the three on the push. 41-15 is an absurd number. I mean, that is just insanity. What an impressive run Steve's had so far.
To show how difficult it is, I looked back one of the years that I won the 2009 Super Contest, and there's like 300 people. I went 53-30-31. So I was only 22 games above 500, and I won. Now I'm 26 games above 500, and we're only two-thirds of the way through the year, and I'm not even in first. It's so difficult to beat Mike Mattisau, former professional poker player. It ain't going to be easy to get all the chips. You got to beat 5,000 guys. You got to run really, really good.
Patrick, the other thing is, to Steve's point, the one thing that's so challenging, and that's why I've always thought the contest should actually pay out more Circa Millions than Survivor, because it's just a much harder situation, right? Like in Survivor, you got to win one game against a non-spread, and the difficulty is you can't use a team twice. But Steve is on this incredible run. He could go 3-2 the rest of the way, which is incredible, 60%. And you might end up in 10th place. Like, you've got to go 4-1, 5-0, 3-1-1. These are difficult things to be able to accomplish. And we're still talking over the next, what was this, week 12? So you got another 7 weeks or 6 weeks to go. Excuse me.
Yeah, if I went 3-2 from here on in, I'd actually be confident. A lot of depends how much the line moves, win or lose. But I'd be confident I'd be top five, but I don't think I would win. Yes.
If you were to win amongst 5,300 others in 2023, when everything's just exploding, you would have so much flex equity. If you know what I'm saying here, meaning you're a professional handicapper, you've been doing it, you're 25 years, and you're one of the best to do it. So along with that comes a lot of responsibility, but it also, as you know, Steve, in this industry in particular, comes a lot of hate and second guessing. If you were to win this, you could always just post that and say, okay, you didn't respect it when I went back to back in the Super Contest. How about this year?
Well, the naysayers will poke holes, and they do have one valid point. Certainly they do this with Helmuth, and they're like, well, he's a poker tournament player. He's not, a top five in the world, cash player. And you know what? It's hard to be top five in the world at everything. I'm perfectly happy if someone wants to say I'm a top five in the world contest player and maybe not a top five in the world NFL better. I'd be good with that.
First of all, the assertion that Helmuth isn't a great player because he's just great at tournaments is ridiculous. But Steve, why do you think there's so much vitriol? Patrick, your thoughts as well. I get the jealousy factor, but why is there so much vitriol when somebody makes 9 picks, they win 8 in a row, they lose the 9th one, they're the dumbest person in the world? My thing is, go ahead and do it yourself. Don't worry about what anybody else is posting on social media if you're that much smarter than everybody else. I don't get it. Like me, I personally, I don't look at social. I don't worry about somebody else's picks. I don't criticize anybody else's pick. I have my own lane and I stay in that. I don't understand understand if Steve wins this contest or if he doesn't, why someone will come out and be just critical either way. I don't understand the vitriol that comes in this particular space with people making picks and trying to help out the general public.
You know, I almost feel like, well, what is the movie? There was two magician movies that came out. One was The Prestige, and the other one, there was another magician movie, and they have this magician where they come out to a guy, and they're like, we're going to arrest you for, like, you know, falsely saying you can make things appear and disappear. And he opens up his window and he yells, it's not real! It's just an illusion. And so I'd be happy to go ahead and tell people I can no more hit 57% against widely available numbers in the NFL than I can speak Russian. I mean, I'm doing the very best I can with contest strategy and with everything else. Example, last Sunday in the NFL, no many best bets I gave my clients, zero on sides, zero. The numbers are that tight, but I have to pick five for the contest. So
that's the irony, Steve. If you and I will all remember, somebody got on you for betting into stale contest lines, which is legitimately an impossible thing to do because everybody's betting the same numbers.
Well, that's so, the beauty is we're all playing against the same level playing field. But you know,
they be stale.
I was talking with Matt Eumanns and he asked me, like, in college, well, you know, who do I like? And I said, you know what, I really like LSU, and I personally laid 10, and we both agreed, you know, it's probably good up to minus 11.5. Of course, I'm past posting that one game, but then bingo, LSU wins by 12. And guess what? If you bet it early, you won. If you bet it very late, you won. If you bet it on Saturday, you know, early in the morning, you lost. So it's just getting the better of the number.
Well, let's start there because Steve, you've been helping and kind of a mentor to me for so many years. I went on with our buddy Andy Staples, who's one of the best at covering college football. And I started to sound like you because, Steve, you would have been proud. I said, listen, I don't really care about the nuances of the games anymore. It's more about just hunting numbers. And we can talk about that with your Chicago Bears catching 4.5, which is a fantastic number. You've got them 3.5. And now all the value on Chicago sitting at 3 is obviously gone. But it's just as you get more into the sport, maybe you can elucidate on this a little bit. It's more just about the number as opposed to, you'll always say your famous thing is, I don't know anybody that plays on the team, but I don't need to.
Yeah, I'm not sure what state the Vikings play in, but I'll tell you this. I'm confident in my power rating. They only have the Vikings as a 0. And people are like, oh, the Vikings are better than an average team. And I'm like, they weren't even better than an average team last year. And their two best offensive players don't play for them no more. So, JJ's injured and Cousins gone. And anyone who says Dobbs is better than Cousins, it's like, oh, Dobbs scored touchdowns on two plays Cousins couldn't score touchdowns on. I agree 100%. And believe me, every single NFL general manager, if he had to have a quarterback next year for 1 year, would take Cousins over Dobbs for a reason. Cousins is a little bit better than Dobbs. So because of that, I'm confident in my Vikings power rating being an average team, and I'm pretty confident that the Bears are about 2 points worse than an average team, and that lands me on this game being 3, which means the Bears plus 4.5. It sounds like a trivial difference. No, it's an enormous bet. So I bet plus 4. I bet 4.5 against the Westgate. I bet the 4s, and I even bet some 3.5. I took 3.5 in the contest, and the people are like, oh, so Fez is on the Bears. No, the line is 3, and right now, if you think you can make money, if you can just sit back, you know, eat turkey for 4 days and just hear who Steve Fezzik tells you who he likes on a Monday night game 2 hours before kickoff, you're delusional. I mean, the number is right 95 out of 100 times. The best evidence I can give is that at Circa, they haven't done their discovery yet. Maximum bet $10,000 on NFL sides every game on Sunday. This game, you bet $100,000. Do you think Jeff Sherman's just giving away $100,000 to someone that has the right side? No, because you know what? The only argument I think at this point we can make is, should the line be 3.2 or 2.8? It's not. It shouldn't be 3.5, right, and it shouldn't be 2.5. Now, I get it. After the game's over, we may well say, oh, the Vikings should have been favored by 10, or the Bears should have been favored. That's different. That's if we can get into our time machine. But right now, with all the information available, if I had to make a bet on a betting exchange, I'd play the Vikings minus 3 even money. Because on the betting exchange, that it's basically a no-vig 3 in each direction. Lay 101
in each
direction.
It's gone through the market manipulator. and it spit out the true number. Steve got 4.5. Can you explain how you got the 4.5 to maybe just a new better?
Yeah. So what I do is I go through my box scores on Sunday night, after betting live all day, and I'm half vegetable. I update my power ratings. I plug it in. And then before I go to sleep, I take a look at what my numbers are and what the market numbers are. And I go ahead and fire against that. And the opening number in this game was 4. And the week before on the look ahead lines, it was 4.5. And I bet both of them.
You know, real quick, I want to go back to the point Steve made about making the wagers earlier. You know, Patrick, I bet Cincinnati at +2 against Buffalo before the line came out. And then the Bengals all of a sudden have a great showing and then become a favorite at home. And it goes to the look ahead lines are so huge of an advantage. If you think the number is going to move one way or the other, I think that's so prudent in terms of betting. I don't think enough people do that because the average person is just kind of betting Sunday morning for the Sunday afternoon games. And they should be looking at that. I know we're going to come back on the other side. Steve, I want to ask you a little bit about, if you see a number at 3, kind of gauging which way you think the number is going to go. It's hard to get the number off from 3 down to 2.5, but I want to get into that a little bit when we come back.
Sure.
We shall do that. Wonderful. Again, 41-15-3, second place Circa Millions. Let's cheer along our boy, Steve Fezzik. He's got plenty more to come on the other side. Steve Fezzik, pregame.com, Fezzik Sports on Twitter, joins us on a Monday here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, just a minute to tell you about Zyn. We're always debating what a team needs to go to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. You can find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's ZYN.com. As a warning, this product does contain nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out right in the middle there is Steve Fezzik, one of the best professional handicappers around. My name is Patrick Maher. We'll get to San Francisco and Philadelphia in just a second. I did want to just put a bow because we were discussing why so many poker pros and poker players will then go and lose a ton of money in sports betting. Because you would think that, you know, betting itself, a lot of the same attributes or qualities would lend themselves to you being successful. Well, it brings me just to kind of wrap this up, Steve. If you were a planner for your life, a vacation planner, you would probably have to be detail-oriented, like a fastidious person, right? The vocation that you have, which is a sports bettor, I think what makes you great at it is you're able to disassociate. Like Amal said, you don't want to be chasing. You don't want to be chasing money. You don't want to be chasing bad numbers. You got to disassociate. What else would you say? Because you're kind of an eccentric person. So I'm curious what you think the attributes or some of those tendencies make up a good sports bettor.
You should know the weaknesses of every sports book. You should have access to all of them and play. And, you know, use an example. If you like playing the favorites on the money line, DraftKings is your book live because typically DraftKings will deal a lower money line than what their competitors will. So if you see like the Rams kicking butt and they're suddenly laying 6.5, you're going to have to lay like -315 at some books, but you might get a -280 at DraftKings. I know that sounds ridiculous to be laying -280. It was a great bet this past, you know, Sunday live wagering. There's some books that are still dealing 4-team, 6-point NFL teasers at -100. Obviously, that's the same. I'm sorry, at 3-1. Correction. At 3-1, that's the same as a 2-team teaser at even money. So a 2-team, 6-point NFL teaser at even money is phenomenal. So a 3-1 is phenomenal because you're doubling your payout twice. So no, the book you're playing against and where they're most likely to go ahead and offer something that's extremely attractive. And I could like run down the table. Like at the South Point deals lines 2.5, 3, 3.5. They don't put VIGs on their money lines. So you get a game like tonight and it's lined at 3. Well, the South Point's not going to do you any good. But you get a game like the Eagles game. Guess what? The lines opens at 3.5 Buffalo. Then it goes to 3.25. And you can still get 3.5 on Buffalo. And then it goes to 3. And then it goes to 2.75. And you can get the Eagles when they flip it down to -2.5, lay -2.5, lay $1.10. Now, needless to say, the South Point got annihilated on that game because they didn't just get sided, they got middled and sided. So that's an example where if you pushed on that game, you're doing everything wrong. If you bet on Buffalo, you won. If you bet on the Eagles, you won. I understand earlier in the week, maybe you had some Eagles minus three and you could have pushed. But there's no way you could have made a bet on that game and lost on the side. If you told me you lost by betting that game, you just go play poker. Go do something else, because those are the games that the pros all win on.
You know, the other thing, Steve, you brought up a really good point, which is when you look at these numbers during the week, Patrick, there's so many opportunities that people don't jump on. Steve does it all the time, right? He's making the bets on Monday or Tuesday. Kind of have to identify these games early on, Steve. And you get the numbers, you generally have a pretty good idea of which way it's going
to
move.
Yeah, and by the way, I know I'm pass posting a lot, so let me try not to pass post, but I'm still doing a little pass post. But San Fran is playing Philadelphia, all right? So anyone that's been following the NFL knows what happened. They played in the playoffs last year, and San Fran's quarterback got hurt, so they didn't have a quarterback, and basically they put their hurt guy back in, and he couldn't throw a forward pass, and they got crushed. So it's a huge revenge game for the 49ers. Almost everyone who does power ratings has the 49ers the best team in the NFL right now. A good 3 points. Some will have them 3.5 better, some 2.5 better than the Eagles. I understand the Eagles have the better record. If I just did nothing but look at like what the standings are, then wouldn't that be swell? And I could just rank them power rating-wise based upon those records. But the Niners are a good 3 points better, and the Niners have 10 days to prepare, and the Eagles just won a game in overtime. And they've had a gauntlet schedule of 5 straight really tough games, and they keep winning phony wins like the game against Kansas City. This game completely sets up for the Niners to win this game. So I bet the Niners -1, -1.5, -125. I gave it out to my clients. I know it's up to -2.5, but this isn't a game where don't lay 3 on this game. It's too high at -3 to have a tangible advantage. Anything less than -3, -2.5 or less, which I know you can still get, the Niners is absolutely a bet.
Love it. And so, again, you got 1.5, and I'm just looking at the market right now. Let's see. It'd just be fun. Where do you think that number ends up closing? I see 2.5s now.
I think 3. And part of the reason is that you can make no case. No professional bettor is ever going to say, I want the Eagles +2. And give me the Eagles, that exhausted Eagles team against the Niners team that's the best in the NFL, and I'll take 2.5. It simply has to go to 3. So get in front of it. Lay the 2.5, and then full disclosure, already you're late to the party because nothing has changed now versus last night at 10 p.m. The only thing that's changed in this game is that now you're laying 2.5 instead of 1.5. But you know what? The reason I bring that up is 2 is one of the deadest numbers in the NFL. So I hate to do that. And I personally, in my pocket, I do have some -1 and some -120. But I laid 1.5. And full disclosure, I even laid a 2 this morning before I came on. So if I was willing to lay -2, and I've already bet like the value of a decently valued used car at -1 and -1.5, that means I think the line should be 3. And so get in front of it, lay the 2.5, figure out what to do with it. Once it goes to 3, and heck, you might get +3, like lay $1.05 if you wait and you like Philly in this game, because I'm not infallible. I'm sure there'll be some people that will like the Eagles saying, how can a team with only one loss be getting 3 at home?
In terms of that, so perfect example with this game, your anticipation is that it'll get up to 3 in this particular matchup simply because everybody's got, or the professionals have, the 49ers power rated higher. But when you have a situation like this, you mentioned it, just explain to people why, if you're betting the Eagles, there's no reason to bet it yet.
Yeah, so there's asymmetric risk here. So in general, teasers are a different thing, but like it is rarely correct to bet a +2.5, a +6.5, and a +9.5. What are you worried? Let me use the 9.5 and the 2.5. What are you worried about? Oh, the line might drop down to 2. Who cares if you bet +2.5 or +2? Who cares if you bet +9.5 versus betting +9? But if you bet +2.5 and the game goes to 3, you just feel like the world's biggest dummy of all time. And I'll use an example. If you bet the Vikings -3.5, how stupid do you feel? Were you really that worried? So what if it had gone to 4? You could lay 4, lay 3.5. It's not that big of a difference. Every half point matters. But the difference between laying 3.5 and laying 3 is like the difference between shooting a bullet and throwing it. You can do a lot more damage, you know, shooting it when you're playing in -3. And heck, I'd make the case with the Vikings. Now you're getting -3 at like -101 on betting exchanges. And you know what? If there's a big betting exchanges, even if you don't have access to it, if you look at a betting exchange like Profit in New Jersey, and if you were in New Jersey and you could lay 3, lay 101, and you're like, but I can make money, lay 3 -$1.10. Again, you're just delusional. If it was that good, put a man in New Jersey to be laying, you know, these attractive numbers, and you'll very rapidly become rich. I want to share with you guys, how rich will you become? Let's say you can hit 60%, but you only have to make one bet a day, your best bet of the day, and let's assume you could hit 60%, which you can't. No one in the world can. At props, yes, but not against sides or totals in the NBA, NFL. But if you could, let's say you start with $1,000. Instead of buying a couch, you decide to invest in sports. You take that $1,000 and you invest 10% of your bankroll each and every day on your best bet. And you hit 60% for 5 years. So you go 1,200 and 800 over a 5 year period, continually investing your 10% of your bankroll. That $1,000, believe it or not, the power of compounding will grow to $1 billion. Now I understand once you got to like $10 million, it'd be hard to get any, you know, all the volume down. And so once you become a millionaire, it's going to be difficult to keep these returns going. But the point is, that doesn't prove that no one can do it in the world, but it shows just how much money is to be made. And the order of the wins and losses is irrelevant. It does not matter. If you hit 60% over 5 years, 1,000 turns into a billion, betting an insane, a normally insane 10% of bankroll on each play.
I like that return on investment. Steve, don't you find it fascinating how you can tell the longer somebody's been betting and the longer, and you know, kind of the knowledge they have about this, when they start off, they go, I hit 65% of my bets. And then a couple of years later, they'll be like, no, I'm hitting 60% of my bets. And then a couple of years later, they're like, look, all I'm trying to do is hit 56%, meaning they start to sharpen up on what it actually takes to profit and how it's impossible to hit anything 60 and above.
Yeah, and all these new content providers, it's amazing. Guys that have never bet. They've never bet. They've been providing content for a year and a half, and they're like, well, I have a new system, and I'm convinced I can hit 57%. Then they have 1 year, they hit 62%, and they think that they're like, you know, suddenly they've cracked the code, that these guys that have been doing this for a living for 20 years, somehow we're all dumbos and dinosaurs, and we could never figure any of this stuff out, and that's why we're just, you know, mired in mediocrity. And the truth is that, like, if you can hit 54% with a lot of volume in NBA sides and NFL sides where the limits are really high, you should become a millionaire, and it won't take you all that long. And guess what? If you don't become a millionaire, you're hitting 54% with a high volume, you're pretty incompetent when it comes to how you're actually betting stuff. And guess what? It's really, really hard to hit that 54%. And sometimes the limits are on games that are moving. You only get it one or two places, and that goes off the board before your number's gone.
Don't go anywhere, Steve, because I want to ask you about college basketball betting. We'll get the final plays for tonight. And also, Steve's newest discovery in all of Las Vegas. I think he discovered it over the weekend. We'll get to that coming up next with professional handicapper Steve Fezzik.